Welcome back, dear students, and it is time to discuss yield spreads. A very important topic for us to be aware of for an important reason, as we shall see, and how to calculate bond valuations. So let's get started on slide 20 with yield spreads. The spread, as we have mentioned in the past, in finance and investment means differences. Remember the spread between the ask price and the bid price with stocks? Well, the yield spread is the difference in interest rates that exists among various sectors of the bond market. In general, the shorter the maturity, the lower the rate. The longer the maturity, the higher the rate. That's the norm. That makes sense. The longer you lend your money out to people, the more chances for things to go wrong. The higher the rating of the bond, the lower the interest rate. Well, that makes sense also, because if it's a company or an entity, a state and local government or the treasury that is very creditworthy, they get a better interest rate. And if it doesn't have a very good credit rating, they're going to have to pay more. Treasuries generally carry the lowest rates, with municipal bonds being next, and general obligation bonds typically paying less than revenue bonds, because general obligation bonds are considered less risky. But as we made mention, some investors, savvy investors, say, oh, no, you don't understand. We love those revenue bonds. They pay us higher rates of interest. And if, assuming we find a good, income-producing water authority, bridge authority, road, or whatever, then we're very happy with that revenue bond. And then corporate bonds have the highest rates. Generally, non-callable bonds will have lower rates than callable bonds. So on slide number 21, we see the spreads of the various sectors, various types of bonds. And this, as we made mention in the previous chapter, is something that you can use to do the chapter 9 assignment. So notice that, see, they show you the CD. This is Fidelity. With Fidelity is, you know, the very good marketing organization, very good company, and they allow you, if you are one of their customers, to see tens of thousands of bonds that are available. Very cool. So looking at the CD rates, oh my goodness, who is putting their money away for 1% in a five-year bond? I don't know, but CD rates are just horrible. And then here are the treasury rates. They're not much better. So the five-year, 10-year, 1.6%. Well, actually, the CD gives you a better rate than the treasury. What are zeros? We talked about zero coupon bonds. These come with a very funny name, strip tease. Look that up. And then we see the corporate bonds. So let's take a look at the 10-year treasury versus the 10-year A-rated bond, 2.95%. So that spread, that difference is fair, not really large, 1.3% more you're getting paid by going with a corporate, whereas the municipal bond is actually hardly paying you any more, 1.75% for the AAA, 1.98% for the AA, so not a whole lot more for the muni bonds. But remember, the muni bonds, we have to do a taxable equivalent yield, and so that's going to wind up paying us more. Okay, so those are the spreads. So you can use that for your Chapter 9 assignment. Often investors will speak about the bond spreads as being tight or wide. A tight spread means the interest rates among the bonds they are evaluating are very close to one another. Say, Treasury paying 4.8, a corporate bond paying 5.1. They would call that 30 basis points. Every basis point is 0.01. So instead of just saying 0.3 interest, you know, 0.3%, they say, oh, it's 30 basis points more. Whereas if you have a wide spread, a treasury paying 3.2 and a corporate bond paying 8.2, that's a huge spread. That's 500 basis points, or a whole 505%. For several years, bond since the since the 2000 or so, bond yields spreads were very tight in the early 2000s up to the turmoil of 2008-9. During the turmoil of 2008-9, the global financial crisis, the Great Recession, yield spreads widened to levels not seen in decades since the Great Recession. Remember the Ford bonds we saw in the previous chapter? They have narrowed significantly, as we just saw in the previous slide, over the past few years. In other words, you're not getting paid a whole lot more for taking on more risk. Not the best deal, in my humble opinion. Slide 23 shows us, up until about 2011 or so, 2012, the interest rate versus inflation. And so the blue is the interest rates, whereas inflation is the red. So you see inflation is much more volatile, but in general, the bond rates will follow inflation, and then as inflation falls, the bond rates fell. Notice during the Great Recession, inflation actually went negative. We had deflation, which sounds like something that's exciting. Yeah, that's what we want. We want lower prices. But remembering that one of the biggest components of inflation is wages, right? Do we really want lower wages? Well, some people have been experiencing that for quite some time. The yield curve. This is the graph that represents the relationship between a bond's maturity and its yield at a given point in time. It's also used to make comparisons amongst types of bonds. Normally, during most of the time in the economy, most years, the yield curve is upward sloping. It starts with shorter term interest rates having lower amounts and longer term getting higher. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. Longer term bonds have higher interest rates than shorter term bonds. Sometimes, though, the yield curve is downward sloping, inverted, upside down. Shorter-term bonds and bills have higher interest rates than longer-term bonds. That doesn't make sense. How could that be? Slide 25. The red upward-sloping curve is normally what we see. Shorter-term interest rates, shorter-term maturities have lower interest rates. But why it doesn't make sense? Why would we have shorter term interest rates higher than longer term interest rates? Why do longer term debt securities normally have higher interest rates than shorter term debt securities? Well, there are three hypotheses, and all of these make sense. The shape of the yield curve reflects investors' expectations of future interest rates. We'll come back to this. That makes sense. Yeah, what's going to happen in the future? Because investors are always looking towards the future, however imperfectly. There's the maturity preference hypothesis, which means I prefer the liquidity, sometimes called the liquidity preference, of short-term securities. In other words, I'm going to get my money back soon. And therefore, I will take a smaller interest rate, a lower interest rate, for shorter-term securities, and I will require a premium for longer-term bonds. And then the market segmentation hypothesis. The market for debt is segmented on the basis of maturity. You know, there's a supply and demand curve for a three-month, for a six-month, for 1 year, for 5 year, for 10 year. So supply and demand within each segment determines the prevailing interest rate. All of these make sense. All of them have merit. But how do we account for the times when the yield curve is inverted? What factors could cause an inverted yield curve to occur? And what can the yield curve tell us about the future of the economy? Slide 28. Since World War II, every time the yield curve has inverted, where short-term rates were higher than long-term rates, the economy has fallen into a recession. Now, there was one exception in 1966 where the economy just briefly hit zero growth. It didn't go negative. It didn't go into recession. But it just briefly touched 0% growth and then kicked back up. In 2019, ever so slightly, the yield curve inverted, causing renewed fears of an imminent recession. But then the coronavirus came along and, you know, just basically stumped everything, and it just smashed everything in its path, including the yield curve. For about 2 years before the beginning of 2008, the yield curve was slightly inverted. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion about this. The bond market was predicting a recession for over 2 years. When's it going to happen? I don't know, but the bond market's predicting it. The stock market, for the most part, didn't believe them. Oh, you guys are goofballs. It wasn't until the fall of 2008 that the officials charged with tracking the economy acknowledged, yes, we're finally in a recession. It took over 2 years, but the bond ghouls were finally proven right. Now, why would we use the term ghoul for bonds? Well, think about it, folks. Bond prices rise when interest rates fall. When do interest rates fall? Typically when we fall into recession. So the bond ghouls love that because their prices of their bonds, the value of their bonds, and well, I don't know if that's really true, but that's what you hear. That's the prevailing conventional wisdom, that the bond investors love a recession. So let's take a look at the current yield curve. And, you know, just last year, there used to be a bunch of places that would show the yield curve. Now they're far and few between. It used to be that the New York Times showed it, Morningstar showed it, a couple other places. But now I got to go to Guru Focus. And so here, the blue is the current yield curve. You see, it's upward sloping. Short-term interest rates are paying nothing. If you go back to that one slide that showed you from Fidelity, it showed you they're paying nothing, 0.01, 0.02. And then you finally get to the 10-year paying about, you know, 1.65, as we said. 20-year, 30-year not paying much more. Excuse me. 20 or 30-year paying not much more. It's not very exciting. But a year ago, just as COVID hit, what happened? Right. Interest rates collapsed. Federal Reserve Bank lowered short-term interest rates again, close to zero. Why? To kickstart the economy that they were certain was going to go into a pandemic-induced recession. Long-term interest rates fell precipitously. Why? Because we're going into a recession. Remember the anticipation of investors believing if we go into recession, interest rates are going to fall, so let's buy long-term bonds. Interest rates fall, our bonds will be worth more. We could turn around and sell them. Those are the traders, the speculators. But if we go back 2 years, we see in 2019, we see that inversion we talked about. Short-term rates, not much, but we're higher than intermediate term rates, but we're still much lower than long term rates. And so what was happening? What happens here? Well, the Federal Reserve Bank started in 2015-16 to raise interest rates ever so slowly from zero, you know, basically zero. Why? Because they saw the economy getting stronger. They felt, okay, it's time to start raising interest rates back up to somewhat normal levels. However, the folks buying 3-year, 5-year, 6-year, 7-year bonds were saying, you know, we don't think that's the case. We think maybe a recession is around the corner. And if a recession is around the corner, exactly, interest rates are going to fall, my bonds are going to be worth more. So let's read. Notice how the yield curve was slightly inverted in 2019. Although there was much talk of a coming recession during 2019, many experts were quick to point out that the yield curve could be inverted for quite some time before the economy actually fell into recession. That's the lesson we learned in 2005, 2006, and 2007, when the yield curve was slightly inverted for over 2 years. Well, COVID-19 came onto the scene, and both ends of the yield curve collapsed as the Federal Reserve lowered short-term interest rates back to zero, and bond investors braced for a pandemic-induced recession. And as we found out, it was very short-lived. For some people, they have been devastated by this virus. Many people have died, but the economy has actually held up pretty darn well for many others. It's been a tale of two economies. For one segment of the population, hey, we're doing okay. Other segment of the population, we're starving. And hence, we have to do something. You know, capitalism is not perfect. We have to do something to bridge this inequality gap. We have to. We can't continue that one segment of the population is just not served by the economy. It would lead to a demagogue being elected as our president. It already has. Slide number 30. Yeah, who could fix everything? Who turned out to be a grifter and a charlatan and a tax evader? We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. You know who I'm referring to, Agent Orange. Yeah, okay. Slide number 30. Remember, poly means many and ticks are blood-sucking insects. So, slide number 30, bond pricing. So that was the yield curve. Remember that when you read through the articles in the financial press and read about the yield curve and the yield curve's inverted. Are we going to a recession? Bond pricing. Here's the exciting part of bonds, folks. Finally, number 30. Bonds are normally priced according to the present value of their future cash flows. What do we get from bonds? The semi-annual interest payments, our interest twice a year, and then the repayment of the principal. Although other factors will always need to be considered, such as the creditworthiness of the issuer, because if an issuer runs into trouble, the price of their outstanding bonds will fall, because investors will be afraid of the default. But let's just assume that all the bonds we deal with in this class are not going to go through default. So here's our formula. The bond price is equal to the present value of the interest income plus the present value of the repayment of the principal. Does that look familiar? That's the discounted cash flow model. Before, when we did the stock price, we looked at the present value of the dividend payments and the present value of the expected price of the stock in 3, 4, 5 years. But both of those, in the terms of stocks, was very iffy. Some companies have been paying dividends for decades, but they could stop paying dividends next quarter. And who knows what the stock price is going to be in 3, 4, 5 years. However, with bonds, assuming we don't see a default, we're going to get our interest payments and we're going to get our $1,000 back when the bond is repaid. Now, since bonds pay interest normally every 6 months, we really should be doing semi-annual compounding. However, annual compounding is much easier to compute manually and will give you almost the exact same result, you know, a few bucks off. Computations are easily done using the present value tables, and spreadsheets make it even easier. So we already have a spreadsheet out there for you to play with that does it automatically. But let's learn how to do it manually using the bond present value tables. Okay? Okay. Slide 32. So here is a bond on slide 32 from AT&T. You've heard of them, right? It's a bond paying 7.625%. Woo-hoo-hoo! Interest rates now, 2, 3%. It's due in approximately 10 years, April 15th, 2031, and it's priced to yield 3.057%. Of course, our coupon rate is 7.625%. But we have to pay a whole lot more than $1,000 to get this bond paying 7.625. So we're only going to get yield to maturity of a little over 3%. If we calculate the current yield, that's a little over 5.5%. And it's rated BBB, so it's still investment grade. So we're going to use 3%. Why? Because the tables use whole percentages. So let's go take a look at the table. I'm going to show you, here are the present value tables. It's a good idea to print this one out. Now, you can't see it because it's too darn small, but the right side is the same present value table that we used in Chapter 6. The present value of a lump sum, single payment, one-time payment. But the right side. I pointed to the right side, my other left. The right side here, on the right-hand side, see where the cursor is? Look at the cursor. that's what we saw in Chapter 6. The left side is for a stream of payments. Now, let's take a look at the problem in more detail and come back to this. The bond price is equal to the present value of the interest income and the present value of the repayment. So the present value of the interest income, we could calculate it year one, year two, year three, year four, as we did with stocks when we did the dividends. But that's going to take 10 computations. If it's a 20-year bond, 20 computations. Wouldn't it be nice, since we know that the interest income is exactly the same every year, if we could just use one table? And indeed, we can. We use the table on the left side. Whereas the present value of the repayment, that's a single payment. So we use the table on the right side. So let's go to the table. So we're going to get paid $76.25 every year. Let's go back to the table and now make it a little bit bigger. The table on the right side says, oh, this is the present value of a stream of payments. We're going to get $76.25 for 10 years. So we're going to use this row right here. And we're discounting, that's the term we use. I know it's a terrible term, but that's what we use. We're discounting it at 3%. That's our discount rate. So there's the number, 8.530. So we multiply the $76.25 times 8.530, and that's equal to $650 for a little over 41 cents. So in other words, we're going to get $76.25 each year for the next 10 years. Well, that's $762.50. Just move the decimal point one to the right. But that $762.50, which we're going to get over the next 10 years, $76.25 a year, is really only worth to us today $650. That's the present value of the interest income. I know the words get in the way of the meaning, but really, that's all it's saying. That $762.50 that we're going to get, you know, $76.25 every year for the next 10 years, is worth to us today at 3%. $650.41. Now, if it were 4%, yeah, 10%, that changes, right? And that's what the tables are there for. Now, that was the stream of income from the interest. What about the one-time principal payment? Well, we're going to use the other table, the table that we used in Chapter 6. It's the same table. We go across to 3%, down to 10 years. And why is that shaded? That's shaded for the first worksheet. When you go through the worksheet, you'll see. Why is 7% shaded? That's because of the worksheet. Here it is. Three, go across 3%, down 10 years, 0.744. And so there, 1,000 times 0.744 is $744. Most of you can just move the decimal place two to the right. So you add the $650.41 to the $744, and you get $1,394.41. Well, guess what? The price on April 6th was The price on April 6th was $1,395.49. Pretty darn close. The bond calculator gives us $1,389 for annual payments and $1,393.49 for semi-annual payments. See, they're all very close to one another within a few bucks. Why is the semi-annual payment prediction a bit higher than the annual payment prediction? Well, remember, we're getting our semi-annual payments sooner than annual payments. So you see, instead of waiting for the end of the year to get the whole $76.25, we're getting whatever it is, $38.12 twice a year. You see that? So it's worth a little bit more, a few bucks more to us. So yes, bonds are boring. Bonds are fixed. Bonds are reliable. Now, what happens if interest rates drop precipitously or rise precipitously? Well, the price of the bond is going to change, and we could sell it before it matures, but most people buy their bonds and just clip the coupons, and then when the bond matures, thank you very much, they get their $1,000 back. But would you want to pay almost $1,400 for a bond that's going to mature in 10 years for $1,000? It's not something that I'm interested in doing, but then again, that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. As the Germans say, that is what makes horse races. So, now in the worksheet, you're going to do some calculations. Do them 2, 3, 4 times, then do them 2, 3, 4 times again, and you'll never forget how to do them. And of course, there's a spreadsheet with a presentation on how to use it, so you don't even have to use the present value tables. But please do, because I find that the present value tables really do help people understand exactly what they're doing instead of just popping up a number out of a spreadsheet and go, okay, well, how did I get that? You say, oh, okay, this is how I got it. Okay, let's now burn through our last few slides and discuss some last attributes about bonds, which hopefully will once again emphasize the need to be a long-term investor. Slide 33. The uncertainty about future value of an investor's bond investments that results from the need to reinvest bond interest payments and redemptions at yields not known in advance is a reinvestment risk. What? In other words, changing interest rates don't only affect the price of your bonds, they also affect your future income, as you need to reinvest the interest income in bond repayments. So sure, oh boy, interest rates have fallen. My bond is worth more. Well, guess what? New bonds are going to pay you less income. That's not good. And sure, if interest rates have risen, oh, my bond is worth less. But think about it. Rising interest rates means new bonds are going to pay you more interest. So again, we take a long-term perspective and we realize that, yes, even bonds can be thought of as in long-term. So that's the reinvestment risk. Taking a long-term perspective helps us when we see our bond prices fall because interest rates have risen, and it also tempers our enthusiasm when we see our bond prices rise, realizing that new bonds are going to pay less interest. Duration. Now, this is something that the book they want you to learn how to calculate, don't bother. It's done for you. And it's not even that important for the vast majority of us working grunts who use mutual funds for our bonds. But this is important for people who do have significant wealth, or maybe you're a broker for someone who has significant wealth and is heavily invested in bonds. Duration. This is a measure of the bond price's sensitivity to the changes in interest rates and bond yields. This captures both the price risk and the reinvestment risk. It is used to indicate how a bond will react in different interest rate environments. The duration of a bond changes as it approaches its maturity date. Well, that makes sense, right? Duration, time, but also as current interest rates change. In general, the longer a bond's maturity, the longer its duration, and the higher a bond's nominal rate and yield to maturity, the shorter its duration. Because remember, the higher the interest rate, the more opportunity for things to go wrong, right? The shorter the duration, the less potential price volatility, and vice versa. Did I say that right? The higher the bond's rate, yeah, in other words, if it's a higher priced bond than other bonds, it usually means it's a lower quality bond. Slide number 35. Duration and immunization. You like this word they use, immunization? It's kind of dumb. Investors who have a specified time horizon can use bond immunization to increase the probability of successfully achieving their desired goals. You keep the average duration of your bond investment equal to your time horizon. You would thus be more protected against interest rate-induced price swings. Well, what's the problem? This is not for us, folks. It requires constant rebalancing of your bond portfolio, since durations of bonds change as interest rates change and bonds get closer to maturity. Who uses? Obviously, mutual fund managers. If you bought an intermediate term bond fund, you want it to be an intermediate term bond fund. So the bond mutual fund manager and the pension manager and the life insurance money manager, they're going to use these techniques. You and I are not going to use these techniques, right? We're just not going to do it. We're going to buy a bond, hold it till it matures, and then it gets taken away from us. Slide 36. There are three bond investment strategies, and we've sort of danced around these. We've sort of made mention of these. The simplest one, easiest to implement, I'll tell you, I ask in the comments below, but I'll just tell you, income strategy. You basically want to buy the bonds for the interest income. Whereas the capital gains strategy is speculating that interest rates will fall, anticipating interest rates will fall, selling the bonds at a capital gain. And that's the hardest to implement because, as we said, there are people who are paid tremendous sums of money. You might be one of them in the future to incorrectly predict where interest rates will go. So you have to be ready for when you are wrong. When you're right, then you look like a genius and they throw love, money, and attention at you. When you're wrong, then you have to have a really good excuse for why you're wrong and why you won't be wrong next time. And then the combination of the two is a total return. You purchase bonds for both the income and the possibility of capital gains. And you will often see mutual funds called the total return bond fund. So yeah, we're interested in the interest that the bonds pay, but we're also going to do a little bit of speculating and buying bonds with the idea that they will have capital gains. Okay? Now, bond laddering, again, is something that the vast majority of us folks don't really do because we don't have considerable sums of money to invest. But this is a strategy of purchasing bonds with staggering maturities. It's just another way to diversify. We purchase some bonds with shorter term maturities, some with intermediate term maturities, and some with long term maturities. So you are dabbling, right? You're diversifying, having a little bit of this and a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and a little bit of the other thing, so that if there is an indeed a interest rate spike, you're not all in long-term bonds. But if there's an interest rate fall, we do get to take advantage of some of the capital gains on our longer-term bonds. This is very popular with pension fund, mutual fund managers, life insurance companies, since they have considerable sums of money to invest. And what are the advantages and disadvantages? Well, what we just said, you know, you're diversified, which is a good thing. But if you were to concentrate and the interest rates went your way, yippee. If they didn't go your way, oh, well, yeah. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? Slide 38. What's going on here? Let's go on here. Slide 38. Here is, again, from Fidelity, showing the bond ladder. Well, look at those. Who is buying these things? You know, 0.01%. Why even bother? 2 year, 0.17, 5 year, 0.88. Look, and look at the spread between the corporate 2 year and treasury 2 year. That's nothing. But now look at the 10 year. Now, if you had just a year ago, the 10 year was, it touched 0.5%. So that, even though in nominal terms, that's not a big rise from 0.5% to 1.5%, still not very much, but that's a huge incremental. It's a, you know, it went up twice from 0.5 to 1, and then 1 to 1.5. And now look at the Treasury, 2.33% for 30 years. People buying 30-year bonds now are locking in their money at 2.33% with interest. I mean, with inflation running about 2%, probably going to go up higher as we come swinging out of COVID. Please, please, please. Not too high, of course, but if we do come, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Federal Reserve, they're all predicting. They don't know. A lot of it depends on what COVID slaps us with next. But they're all predicting that once we get out of this, things are going to be a whole lot better. And I agree with them. If we beat that darn microbe, which remains to be seen, because now we have people filling up stadiums. Well, I don't know about you folks, but I got my second vaccine a couple weeks ago, but still I'm wearing my mask. You decide whether you want to make a political statement or a medical statement or a scientific statement. But heaven help us. Heaven help us. And that, dear students, is our description of bonds. Boring bonds, stodgy bonds, reliable bonds. And now we're going to turn our attention to preferred stocks, convertible bonds, convertible preferred stocks, hybrid securities, with a very quick presentation, because the reality is the vast majority of us retail investors are just not going to get involved with these hybrid securities. And then, dear students, we tie it all together with our discussion of diversification and asset allocation in Chapter 11. So we are so proud of you. We thank you once again. Think about how far you've come. And so don't give up now, dear students. Don't give up. Never give up.